I hope you don't mind. I think of Dove as the daughter I never had. John said this to my mother, and like a father, he was pedagogic. Although he hated teaching, formerly, he said, perhaps the experience at the new school he didn't want to continue in that vein. But we used to go to exhibitions very regularly with John, and he would comment about the work. And in time, I got a fair idea of what his views were. And he would lose interest in work if it had a recognizable image. But that wasn't doctrinaire. In fact, Morris Graves, for instance, his images of birds, he was a friend of John's, and upon occasion John would get a beautiful folded watercolor, which he would gratefully frame. And John thought, for instance, if an artist repeated himself, used an image again and again, he disliked that. He disliked repertory in dance, and an artist culling too heavily in his past images. And for instance, one time we saw John and I and Bill and I went to see Jasper Johns's new work at Castelli, and once again he had worked over old images, and he mentioned, why did he have to keep digging in so much on that subject? If you were showing him a work of art of yours and he liked it, he would say beautiful. And if he didn't, he was silent. And if the work was in progress, and for instance, I hadn't told him that it was, I was just thinking about it, but I was kind of showing it to him with some hint, a kind of plea perhaps of whether to go this way or that way, or some kind of response. And then I admitted that it wasn't finished. John would spin on his heel and act as if he his time had been stolen. One time we were looking at footage of points in space, and a filmmaker, Elliot Kaplan, had put a very beautiful shot of an overhead shot, and it appeared twice in the film. And as we looked at the footage, John said, it cannot be repeated, that something unique, it should stand alone, it would be much stronger, and the repetition in this case destroyed the quality of the structure. I will be the healthiest corpse.
I think of Dove as the daughter I never had.
John said.
John said,
macrobiotic cooking,
like
organic food,
pedagogic.
Chinese medicine, shiatsu massage,
teaching,
dental floss, everything he was focused on except for exercise. And Bill and I, we would visit with John.
We used to go to exhibitions.
I would come three times a week for dinner.
About the work.
These wonderful macrobiotic dinners.
And in time,
learn to
I
cook
got
from
a
John
fair idea
in
of what
use organic
were.
Food.
And he would lose interest in work if it
we
had a
would
recognizable image.
Try to get John involved with exercise.
In fact,
and even
Morris
had,
Graves,
with dance,
instance,
he would focus on the beauty of the
birds,
movement of the body, but not on the healthy
upon occasion, John
movement
get,
of the body. So, of course, the discipline of dance was very crippling
which he would gratefully
for an extended
if
use of the body.
An artist repeated himself
and
used an image again
so,
and again.
For instance,
he disliked
Bill
he
at one point gave John a jump rope, hoping that he would use it, and he said that it was small enough that it could fit in his briefcase and he
images.
Could tour and have this kind of focused discipline activity
for instance, one time we saw
to stay
John,
healthy. But in fact, what happened was John broke his arm.
Castelli, and once again,
not
had,
maybe I don't know a few
over old images.
Almost a year after the introduction of the jump rope, and he never returned to it.
Digging in so
and
much
he felt,
subject.
I think, that he predicted that Merce would end up a cripple,
if you and were that he would
end up in a wheelchair, which indeed did happen. And it was as though he felt that if you focused on taking care of your body, that it would, in the end,
told him that it was. I was just
you'd be end up worse off than you were before you started. That it was destructive to
some kind of response. And then I admitted that it wasn't
finished. Focus too much on health.
John would spin on his heel and act as if he.
Another time we mentioned that we were playing tennis and we had a tennis racket, and John was absolutely scandalized that artists would do something so frivolous as to play tennis,
and a filmmaker,
and
Elliot
that
Kaplan,
it wasn't put at all. There was no room in the artistic life for such an activity.
And it appeared twice in the film. And as we looked at the footage, John said, "It cannot be repeated. That something unique. It should stand alone. It would be much stronger. And the repetition in this case destroyed the quality of the structure." After Thoreau and Walt Whitman,
the healthiest corpse.
Cage was the next hippie,
John said. The itinerant lifestyle,
cooking,
due to his concert schedule and his work with Merce, and the touring company, and his alternative lifestyle, keeping his own hours, and going back to nature, the time, the period he lived in the woods upstate in New York in a commune with David Tudor and M.C. Richards and Stan Vanderbeek. His anarchy, his love of Emma Goldman, and Emma Goldman was a famous anarchist who eventually traveled the world
and even Merce
and fermented revolution wherever she was.
The beauty of
she
of the body, but
literally was involved in a plot to
movement of the body. So of course,
kill
the discipline
Carnegie,
was very crippling, which
and it a failed attempt. And she worked as a prostitute to make some money to buy a gun for such an event. And John was extremely struck with this book. And he gave me his copy, and I read it with absolutely glued to the pages, John was. So anarchy was his preferred political stance, as Thoreau.
In fact,
his alternative clothes, for instance, he wore blue jeans, albeit ironed blue jeans, and a blue jean jacket that was designed and hand sewn by Matisse's granddaughter, Cathy Matisse. It was very respectful if he had to go to an event, for instance, to get a Legion of Honor or a Chevalier from the French government. He would iron his jeans and look very respectable.
You'd be end up worse off,
albeit in alternative clothes, a la the uniform, the counterculture uniform of Mao Zedong. And his health. Adoption of macrobiotic food, of course, that was a big craze, a hippie craze that was introduced. And one time we went to a dinner with John and Merce and Bill and myself with Michio Kushi, and he cooked a dinner in Manhattan. And we attended with one of the ABT dancers, Gelsey Kirkland, I think it was. And she was very adapted. A real fan of macrobiotic food, and she looked, trying to look 20 going on 60. Bill asked her to dance.
After
Uncle
Thoreau
Merce
and Walt Whitman,
John called Merce Uncle Merce,
hippie.
And
John
it was
said,
interesting because he was
due to his
not
schedule his work with Merce.
It's a familiar name, but John was
and his alternative lifestyle,
not emotional. Tried to keep a distance
to nature
on his emotions
the time,
from
the
his emotions
in the
woods
and
upstate
in New York
he
in a commune
I
would
come with David would
Tudor
also
and
soft pedal the homosexual
Stan Vanderbeek
part of his life. In fact, many people today do not know
Emma
that
Goldman
he and was Emma gay Goldman and that he had a 50-year relationship with Merce Cunningham, and they lived together.
And
fermented
revolution wherever she was.
Also, when Bill discovered Alfred Jarry
was involved,
and that Jarry was an outspoken
Carnegie.
To say he was a homosexual is maybe going too far. He may be asexual. But he was extremely outspoken in terms of sex and scandalized
make some money to buy a gun
the people of his time. But also John was kind of allergic to that kind of open.
He gave me his
expression. The only time I saw John and Merce express a kind of intimacy was at a New Year's Eve party. And
his
there, I actually dared to ask John to dance after Christophe de Menil had asked Merce to dance. And so John held me very, very still for a while and then moved very swiftly. And it was, I had to be like spaghetti to be completely loose to follow his lead.
Cathy Matisse.
And then he and Merce danced, and when he and Merce danced, there was a lot of tongues and wicked kind of playful kissing and intimacy. On another time, I went with John to collect watercress in one of his old haunts.
Uniform, the
counterculture. And when I was there, it was as though suddenly, although we had this kind of father-daughter relationship, it suddenly switched into a kind of date. And here I was with a man who was trying to entertain me. And John took the flashlight and guided me on my way through a dense forest path and along a stream and then, over rocks. And then we came to a pool and gathered the watercress. And then John moved the flashlight around like it was fireworks. And he
a real fan of macrobiotic food.
And made it very entertaining. And there was a sort of look of very powerful male, suddenly male gaze on me from him. The next day, I wondered if any of that was away, and it disappeared like fairy dust. Uncle Merce. The 15 ingredients for a composition from John Cage's Norton lectures, which I think were 1990, 91, maybe 91.
But John was alternative lifestyle,
not a method, structure, intention, discipline, notation, indeterminacy, interpenetration,
also soft pedal the homosexual
imitation.
Part of his
devotion,
his
circumstance,
variable,
structure,
was gay.
Non-understanding,
50-year
contingency, inconsistency, performance. I used each one of these words I intended to make
and that Jerry was an
a title for a work of mine.
To say he was a homosexual,
so far I've
maybe
used
going too far. He may
half
be
of them.
Asexual. But he was extremely outspoken.
It was very engaging to and challenging to try to
the people of his
use
time,
these
but also John
ingredients
was
that
kind of
are
allergic to that kind of
that John had analyzed as
expression.
The only time ingredients in the formation of a work of art, and that
intimacy.
The
New Year's Eve party,
for instance, contingency. I used contingency as a title for silverworks that were used with a chemical, and the chemical would make a print, very much like a contact print.
So John held me very, very
in photography, and so one
moved very
outline or use of this chemical was contingent on the next event.
And then he
indeterminacy I used in outdoors with outdoor sculptures that were
wicked
affected by weather, and there was an indeterminate aspect to
another time
how long the materials would last. In this case, pyrite, which is a mineral and a fragile mineral,
and there it was as though suddenly
marble, which is also
it suddenly switched
fragile and turned sugary over time, depending on the hardness of the marble. A variable I used in a copper sculpture, which could be shaped. It was a three-part sculpture that could be shaped in three different configurations, or really an infinite number of configurations.
The flashlight around like it was fireworks.
I mean, three parts and could be used in infinite. Performance I used in
very entertaining
the title of a fire hose at the Metropolitan Museum, and I claimed everything from the claiming of the fire hose, the postcard, to the meetings that the museum might have, to should there be a fire, that too would be my performance. Bob Rauschenberg said that
from John,
it was impossible to make a visual work using chance.
I think we're 100%
chance.
And maybe
I took that as a kind of challenge. I thought, well, that's interesting. That I could see that in case of Bob's work, that he always had a structure. As John analyzed, he said that Rauschenberg would be involved with the grid. And it's very curious that Bob had studied at Black Mountain with Albers, and he hated Albers. He had or maybe he didn't hate Albers, but Albers did hate his work.
Performance.
And that he was obviously too anarchic for Albers' sense of order. Nevertheless, the sense of structure of the grid stuck with Rauschenberg throughout his life. There's the sense throughout the life of his work, there's the sense of a grid.
It was very engaging to
my work. I thought, well, I could use chance in a visual work, perhaps. Let's see. And I used the chemical liver of sulfur on the surface, a prepared surface of silver. And I would silver with thick, heavy silver German leaf, and then pour a chemical on. The chemical activated the surface, and it would change in indoor atmosphere with humidity. So if it was raining, it would weep.
Would make a print.
If it was dry, it would crust. And I thought that the life of the surface of the work, without any focus at composition at all, would be of interest. And indeed, John liked these works very much, and
affected by
I gave him one that was in the. It had a whole sea. The chemistry was a sea on top, and as it crusted and dried, a grid emerged. And John did not like it when the grid of order, as he put it, emerged. And at that time, he said that he told me he didn't like it. But in an interview after he died with Thomas McEvely, I learned that, in fact, instead of being obstinate, as I thought, and telling me he didn't like it, and then I offered to exchange it with another work, he said instead that he wanted to live with it. And the reason he wanted to live with it was because he felt that if he could learn to live with that work, he could learn to live with the life that he was living.
Performance I used in
he used it as a kind of life lesson.
Museum, and I claimed everything from the claiming of the fire hose, the postcard, to the meetings that the museum might have, to should there be a fire, that too would be my performance. After cheating chance
said that John,
John
it was had adopted the I Ching, I think,
using
to,
chance.
Of course,
100% chance.
And embrace
kind of challenge, I thought,
the use of chance to escape his own likes and dislikes in the Zen Buddhist tradition, and to get away from personal choices and his emotions. But every once in a while, he would cheat chance. And I encouraged him one time to do so. He was, in 1987, he was creating his Europa.
Maybe he didn't hate Albers,
in the Frankfurt Europa piece, he had used chance to
anarchic.
In the dictionary to find certain words. And at one time, he was led to the word inflate. And he had another, it was when he was designing the costume. So he had the word rubber, he had the word inflate. And the word inflate, actually that's wrong. The word before the word inflate, or it was above the word he was focusing on. But he told me one time we were driving in the back of a car that the word inflate was right above the word that chance had driven him to. And yet it would have been too delicious, he said, to make this costume in rubber, inflatable, for an opera singer to sing. And that that would be an extraordinary image and, of course, very subversive, which the Europa was an attack, a profound attack on opera in every way, shape, and both musically, visually, in the costumes, in the lighting. He was really making deep and delicious fun of the tradition of opera, which nearly killed him. Literally, he had a stroke during it with the pressures that he took on of being the scenic designer, the choreographer, the writing the
John did not like it.
Libretto, directing. There was no director, but he had to eliminate the director. The lighting, the set design, and of course the music, and the program notes, and the programs. So that's nine different disciplines in traditional opera, which different people would manage. Anyway, so I said to John, well, cheat chance here. You should use the inflate because the chance brought you, not to the exact word, but to the vicinity of the word, and that it was permissible. And John actually did do that. He did use the inflated costume in rubber.
Life lesson. Museum. And I claimed everything from the claiming of the firehouse, the postcard, to the meetings that the museum might have, to should there be a fire, that too would be my performance.
Cheating John's Zen approach to the BBC was very interesting in Points in Space. Bob Lockyer, who was in charge of the production, we had a two-part mandate. One was that there was going to be the filming of the making of the piece and then the piece itself. And we went to London. Bill did the sets, I did the costumes, John did the music, and Merce the choreography. Voiceless Essay was the piece of John's for this dance called Points in Space that Merce had created. There were three sets, and there were...
He was led to the word.
Merce gave us one word, weather. He wanted wild landscape.
And so he had the word rubber.
A very grand, grand design. So Bill had a yellow set, a blue set, and a red set, really indicating very different kinds of, quote, weather. And so John,
but he told me,
the music, Voiceless Essay, was a revolutionary essay based on Thoreau.
And yet it would have been too delicious, he said, to make this costume.
He had recorded it along with the visual work of Merce at a certain sound level. And Bob Lockyer came back and said that the sound was too loud. And so John said, well, when the viewers are watching the film on television, they can turn down their TV sets. And Bob Lockyer said, well, that's not the way people work. If it's too loud, they switch the channel. So John said that, okay, he said, in that case,
the scenic designer, the choreographer,
that he should put the
John did not like it.
Libretto sound order.
Directing
director, attribution that it was arranged by, so it's music by John Cage, arranged by the BBC. And the well, Bob Lockyer did not like that at all. He
so that's nine
decided that that was
in traditional opera, which
not the way he wanted it to read. It was going to just
anyway,
be music
so I said to
by
John
Cage. And he capitulated and agreed that John could have the sound, the original intended sound level
that
accompanied the footage
and John actually did
Points in Space.
Do that. He did use of the inflated costume in rubber. Life lesson. Museum, and I claimed everything from the claiming of the firehouse, the postcard, to the meetings that the museum might have, to should there be a fire, that too would be my performance.
Cheating. John was a curious artist
to the BBC,
who didn't trust his own didn't seem to trust his own emotions. He famously said that Beethoven
Lockyer,
took music in the wrong direction
of the production,
because of his hard on the sleeve
mandate
approach.
That there was going
he
to
said
be,
that music
the film
that let that
the
kind of music
of piece,
would
then
lead
the
to a crescendo.
And
that was like
London,
dragging a prisoner in a truck.
I did the costumes.
He hated overstated emotion in art. Nothing soupy, no blue lighting in theater, no literal images in art, no leading the witness. Outside of a work, Cage was an extremely emotional person. He denied feelings as best as possible.
And there were he was led
publicly espoused the Zen notion that emotions were ruinous to happiness, or at least ruinous to peace.
And
many have suggested that his adoption of the chance operations was a specific strategy not to have to compose literal mechanics of composition. But perhaps more importantly for him emotionally, it was to exclude feelings, arbitrary feelings. Not that there wasn't feeling in his work, and not that there wasn't feeling in his relationships, but he wasn't sentimental. For instance, each time I witnessed him saying goodbye to Tini Duchon, he would be very, it seemed to me, curt. Even though it may, at their age, look like it was the last time they were going to see each other, instead it was,
in that case,
there wasn't an ounce of sentiment. Which surprised me. Tini was the same.
Libretto
sound when they were parting to go on either side of the Atlantic.
It was arranged
their own
by,
side
it was
of the
music
Atlantic.
By John Cage, arranged by
and John
the
could be
BBC.
Wounded surprisingly
and
easily.
Did not like that at
once
all.
His assistant failed to invite him to see a new work, and all of the assistant's friends were invited, but not
music,
John.
So
and
there,
then
John Cage,
felt
and he
that he had been excluded when, in fact, the assistant really. Well, he was excluded, but the assistant thought that John was too high and would not be interested in looking at his work. So it was a misunderstanding, but I could see that John could easily be wounded.
Everything from the claiming of the firehouse, the postcard, to the meetings that the museum might have, to should there be a fire, that too would be my performance.
And this idea of eschewing emotions
didn't seem
and not dwelling on the dark side of life.
He famously said that Beethoven took music in the wrong direction.
Typically, you know, because optimistic, and he had a wonderful laugh, and even into his nearly 80th year, he was, or into his 80th year. He was surprisingly cheerful, optimistic, and laughed easily. And one time we were sitting with Merce and John, and Merce mentioned that a Russian woman who had lived through the period of Stalin. And
outside of a word,
she said that during the period of starvation and mass killing,
as best
that
as possible,
she said, "Don't complain, don't complain." And from a person of that kind of experience saying, "Don't complain," it had another
or at least
very heavy kind of admonition in it.
His adoption of
on the eve of one of the tours of the Cunningham Company, one of the dancers had been raped at knife point. She went on tour nonetheless, and during the throughout the tour, John said that everyone talked about this raping. And by the time we had picked him up at the airport to take him back into town, he was singing this kind of devilish song, and it was rape me, ravish me, rape me, ravish me. And he said it with a kind of gleeful wit, and it made me at first very angry that I thought John would never be raped. He would not be in a prison, and it seemed very unlikely to ever have the experience that this young woman had had. And then on the other side, I saw it as a kind of Zen slap that it was time for her to move on and to get over it in the same way that the monk who slapped a woman, he said to her, she was crying, and he said to this woman, "Why are you crying?" And she said that her son had just died. And he slapped her hard on the cheek, and he said, "Now you'll have something to cry about." And I think what he meant was to move on, to move out of this dark period. I was going through an identity crisis in 1987, and I remember sitting next to John, and Bill and John were playing chess as they did daily chess, and I said to John, he looked at me very concerned, "How are you?" And I said, "I'm working on it." And I could see the kind of respect he had at that moment. It was very beautiful that I didn't dwell on my pain.